This is the first day of this July 2009 7-day session. I'm going to read from one of my favorite session texts. This is a book called Zen Essence, The Science of Freedom, and it's translated and edited by Thomas Cleary. It's a it's an anthology, a collection of teachings, miscellaneous teachings by miscellaneous masters, Chinese masters from the Tang and Sung dynasties. And it begins with the great Zen master Ma Zu. His Japanized name is Basso, but his original Chinese name is Ma Zu. I won't take time to say much, if anything, about most of these masters, but this much. Ma Zu is one of the greatest of the great. His dates are, well, 8th century. We're told that 139 of his disciples came to enlightenment under him, and of those 139, 83 went on to become teachers in their own right. But now we'll just start with the little selections here from his teachings. He begins, "The way does not require cultivation. Just don't pollute it." Cultivation is a rough equivalent of practice. So this is a pretty radical thing to begin with. The way does not require practice. Just don't pollute it. The way is the Tao, the truth. Truth has this sort of static, abstract quality to it that way does not have quite so much of that. It's a good word, the way, because it implies dynamism, it implies action, movement, the unfolding of our lives, the path, the Dharma. He's speaking, of course, from the essential perspective that we are, each one of us is the way originally. We can't be outside the way. Nothing can be outside the way. The problem is we pollute it. And he asks, what is pollution? As long as you have a fluctuating mind, fabricating artificialities and contrivances, all of this is pollution. A fluctuating mind. It's the opposite of the mind that we are developing through our zazen. It's the opposite of a steadfast, even, quiet mind. Fabricating artificialities and contrivances. Whenever we are sitting in the Zendo before Doksan, trying to come up with something to take to Doksan, some question or some comment or some issue, scrounging around in the mind so we can, heaven forbid, not go into Doksan with an empty mind, this is the one obvious kind of fabricating artificialities. I am always telling people, you don't need a reason to come to Doksan. I'm not sitting in Doksan and demanding that you justify your coming. Okay, what is it? What are you here for? Of course, if you have a question or a problem, then bring it. But it kills me to think that people are doing zazen in the zendo, fabricating something to say in Doksan. Doksan has a lot more value than just what happens in the room. First, there is the sitting beforehand. I don't know about other people, but when in the round or two leading up to Doksan, I would really get down to business and make a special effort to get with the practice. So there's that value. And there's just the sheer act of running to Doksan. This can open one up, shake loose things that are clogged in the mind. And then there's the advancing up the through the line, mat by mat. I wish I had a dollar for every time in that process of moving through the line, I found that the question I had or the whatever it was that I had just evaporated. And that's fine. That's great. Things happen in the Doksan waiting line. Things change. That's the way. But here, fabricating artificialities and contrivances is far broader than just this one little example. Really, it basically means dwelling in our thoughts, in our daydreams. It refers to trying to solve problems with the mind, with our discursive mind. It means thinking about anything before this moment, anything that's happened, anything that someone said to us or we said to someone else, anything we've done in the past, and anything we're imagining in the future, any rehearsing, calculating, worrying, contriving for the future. All of it. Artificialities and contrivances. Dwelling in our thoughts is artificial because they're just thoughts. Thoughts are just neuronal firings in the mind. They're not this. Thoughts have no roots. They're just shadows flickering through the mind. We don't want to have anything to do with them. Of course, there is a place for thinking. We do it all the time in our daily lives. We need to solve problems. We need to plan. We need to recall things. But in Sesshin, there is virtually no need to be thinking. There's a verse in the first koan in the Mumonkan, Joshu's Mu, and the verse goes, the second half of the verse goes, with a bit of has or has not, body is lost, life is lost. Mumon there is referring specifically to getting caught in dualistic thoughts. and these are possibly the most troublesome thoughts, is the way we play with dichotomies, has and has not, better and worse, right and wrong, good and bad, should and shouldn't. And then Matsu continues, if you want to understand the way directly, the normal mind is the way. Here the translator makes this normal, whatever the Japanese character is. Other translators have made it ordinary. Ordinary mind is the way. There's a famous exchange between Zhao Zhou and his teacher, Nanchuan, where the young Zhao Zhou asks, what is the way? And Nanchuan replies, ordinary mind is the way. Ordinary mind is normal mind, this mind, the mind with which you're listening to this, to my words now, the mind with which I'm speaking those words, the mind that feels the breeze in the zendo, that notices when the posture is slumping slightly and corrects it. That's ordinary mind, just that. And here Matsu says, the way does not require cultivation. It's our abnormal mind that gets us into trouble. The mind that superimposes thoughts over things just as they are. That's why Matsu says it's not something we have to do, it's something we have to avoid doing. We avoid polluting this naturally responsive, simple, ordinary, adapting mind. Avoid contaminating it with thoughts, unnecessary thoughts. And then finally he ends, what I mean by the normal mind is the mind without artificiality, without subjective judgments, without grasping or rejection. Subjective judgments. Well, we might say that all judgments are subjective. If we mean by subjective right and wrong, they're rooted in our conditioning, often in our personal, emotional conditioning. Without grasping or rejection, well, these are other words for liking and disliking. I like this, I don't like that, I want this, I don't want that. Desire and aversion are the more inclusive, maybe the broader, more inclusive words. It's a fundamental teaching. This is the Dharma. That human beings, we suffer because we are caught in between our desires and our aversions. Sesshin is great training for getting free of our desires and aversions. They may come up, but we don't want to indulge them. That is, thoughts of what I would prefer. For this sesshin, we're going to, again, as in the last sesshin, we're going to have the exercise period, a required part of sesshin every day, not just the first day, but every day. Now, there may be some people who have gotten in the habit of wandering around the pond or other areas who might complain to themselves about this. I'd rather be out sitting or walking outdoors. Well, okay, the thought comes up. You don't need to dwell in the thought. You just make yourself miserable to do so. Part of the great power of sesshin is having our choices removed from us. We don't have to get into the back and forth, should I or shouldn't I? Our sesshins made a great leap in power when we took away the choice of asking for the stick or not asking for it every time the monitors go around. People, of course, still have the choice. If they feel they don't want the stick, they can say that generally. But it used to be, when I first began coming to sesshin, you had to, every time the monitor came near you, you had to decide whether to put up your hands to ask for it or not. And boy, that is a big potential distraction. Should I or shouldn't I? Should I or shouldn't I? Should I or shouldn't I? I don't maybe want to this time, but then if I don't, it'll look like I'm not serious and they'll think more of me if I do, but what am I saying? Because I've got to... Oh. And when we stop that practice... And we just said, okay, write a note if you want something different with a stick, but don't make that decision every time the monitors come around. What a relief that was. That's when sesshin made a quantum leap in depth. And that's all across the board in sesshin. We do things together as one body. Where in our ordinary life do we have the privilege of not deciding? Just moving along with things. It is a privilege. It's wonderful to unplug this mind of preferences, of likes and dislikes. It opens a portal, a gateway into this mind of oneness, of harmony. It ushers us into the way. The way that is beyond preferences. We can't do that in our ordinary lives. We go shopping, we have to exercise the discriminating mind and choose things. Of course. or driving. We have to figure out whether we take this route or that route. Or getting a snack at home, whether to take this or that. Okay, that's just part of life, but it blocks us. It tangles us up in this discursive mind and its workings. And as a result, we can't very easily access this realm that is underneath picking and choosing. That's where the money is. That's where everything comes together. Getting beyond our picking and choosing. I've always felt conflicted about giving people the choice during the exercise period of doing this or doing that or doing this or doing that. There's things that you can say, positive things about it, but I'm not convinced that they outweigh the artificialities and contrivances that we get into. Here's another little selection where Mazu says, "The founders of Zen said that one's own essence is inherently complete." See, he starts off again. He starts off with the essential way of things. In the other selection, he said, "The way does not require cultivation. Just don't pollute it." Here he says it in a different way. "The founders of Zen said that one's own essence is inherently complete." Whole and complete. None of us lacks anything. Most people have heard this so many times that it just goes in one ear and out the other, but if you really believe that, if you truly took that to heart, you would have no self-doubt. You would not wonder, can I come to awakening? Do I have what it takes? One's own essence is inherently complete. He says, just don't linger over good or bad things. That is called practice of the way. To grasp the good and reject the bad is all in the province of contrivance. And if you go on seeking externals, you get further and further estranged. It's a good word, estranged, separated, alienated, divided from the self nature. That's what happens when we are seeking externals, starting with the biggest form of seeking externals is seeking enlightenment. Holding it in the mind is a goal out there. Here I am, this deluded schmuck, and out there is this perfect realm of enlightenment, and if only I could get out there, then everything would be great. You can see how you see this great chasm that we create when we think that way, this great split in the mind, in reality, as if there's some point B in the future that we have to try to get to. That's the problem, that kind of thinking. And so we're given a practice that is here, it's not in the future. It's not out there anywhere. It's right here, now. Mu, breath, What is this? No external. That's not an external. He says, just end the mental objectivization of the world. Just end the mental objectivization of the world. Creating the notion of an object separate from us as a subject. A single thought of the wandering mind is the root of birth and death in the world. Just don't have a single thought and you'll get rid of the root of birth and death. That's what we're here for, isn't it? To get beyond thoughts that obscure the way. Single thought. Divides reality. Anyone who's ever had a moment or more of the experience of samadhi, absolute oneness, knows that that one thought, like a grain of sand that crosses the mind, that one thought creates this whole imaginary structure of dualisms like life and death, good and bad. Another great Chinese master, Fu Ketsu, said once, if a particle of dust is raised, the nation is established. If no particle of dust is raised, the nation perishes. Some people hearing this might think, how could I possibly get to the point where there is not a single thought in the mind? Well, actually, you can't entirely stop the activity of the mind. That's just what a healthy brain does. It generates a certain kind of level of background activity. But that's not the same as a discrete thought, having a thought that mars the inherent purity of the mind. As long as we're not dwelling in any of that thought activity, then we're really free of it. Samadhi doesn't mean a state where there's no thought activity. That would be the equivalent of flatlining, death. It means that we are free of thoughts, even though they may be bubbling up and then passing. Here's another one. Delusion means you are not aware of your own fundamental mind. Enlightenment means you realize your own fundamental essence. Once enlightened, you do not become deluded anymore. Well, that would be true of a real solid deep experience of awakening, but with a lesser experience, a more tentative first glimpse into the non-duality of form and emptiness, which is what almost everyone has as a first experience. It's very slight. Then one could, if one stopped sitting, one could then become deluded again. So why it's so crucial, after passing one's first koan, after initial experience, to continue earnestly practicing so that that little tiny pinprick of an opening doesn't close again. But with a deeper experience, well, you wouldn't want to stop sitting, because you know that in sitting, you're sitting in your enlightened nature. You're restoring and confirming that enlightened nature. So it's all about awareness. Delusion means you are not aware of your own fundamental mind. Another master said, ordinary people are people who are enlightened the whole day long without knowing it. And then he says, if you understand mind and objects, then false conceptions do not arise. When false conceptions do not arise, this is acceptance of the beginninglessness of things. You have always had it, and you have it now. So with awakening, you don't get something. How do we get what we've always had, what we've always been? You've always had it, and you have it now. All right, I'm going to keep this teisho short, so we'll stop now and recite the four vows.